Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Viewing Angles podcast. I am your A-host, Dan Leo. You've heard me on every other episode before, and with me, as always, is my favorite host, B.
Ron Stallworth, also known as Robert Mecki.
He uses an alias, and we tell him not to, but here he is anyway. All right, let's get right into it. I know we're the only movie podcast, so this is literally your only source of information. So we're going to give it to you nice and easy. First, we'll do the trailers of the week, Rob, right? That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, let's jump into it.
All right, right. These are all, I feel like there's only one trailer that's completely new. All of the other ones are like second trailer, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, and the other, they're all pretty short, too. Like, I don't know if that's the new trend that's starting up, but I feel like these were, I guess, YouTube-specific trailers. You're not really going to see any of these other trailers in theaters, I feel.
Yeah, they seem very kind of, like you were saying, TV cut, but for YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's got to get that, you know, because everybody wants to use those bumpers now, and it's the most annoying thing.
Oh, God, yeah. It's like, coming up next is the trailer for the hotly anticipated new movie. And it's like, I clicked on the video already. You don't need to sell me in it. Like, just play
Make sure you watch to the end so we get that sweet, sweet ad revenue.
Right, yeah, make sure you watch to the end. Like, why wouldn't I? Like, you think really that
just,
you saying that
not
is going to make me do
in
it?
In that trailer, yeah.
Right, it's not like that's convincing me where I'm like, oh, I did agree to the beginning of this trailer that I'd watch the entire thing.
It's an implicit contract that you signed when you clicked on the button.
Yeah, exactly. If I want to get out of a trailer, it must be real bad, or yeah. I've already seen it before. You know,
it's a free trailer and I don't even want to watch it.
Exactly. The first of free trailers is Wreck-It Ralph 2. I haven't seen the first one, but I'm excited to watch the first one. And this one when it comes out.
I can't believe you haven't seen Wreck-It Ralph 1. Wreck-It Ralph 1 is great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I believe it, and that's all I've heard. And I love John C. Reilly. I love Sarah Silverman. I love whoever else is in that movie.
Yeah, everybody's great. It's, and the video game references. References off the charts, on point, all day.
That is also what I've heard, that the video game references are especially good.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that my lack of knowledge about video games will surely show.
I don't know. I feel like they're all pretty popular video games. I think it's more of the games that they reference in a Disney movie, I think, is what was surprising to people.
Yeah, that they're referencing like Mortal Kombat and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think because it's all from the old days. I feel like the old games, I'm not super, like, I don't know anything about Castlevania or Turok or.
But you know about Street Fighter.
Vaguely, not really. Like, I know.
I mean, you don't even need to know about it. You just need to be able to recognize the iconography of these games. Like, these games,
okay.
You know.
Because I do recognize that.
Yeah, the story, the details of these old games have nothing to do with the plot of Wreck-It Ralph. Just like I'm assuming that you're not going to have to have visited all the websites they go to in Wreck-It Ralph 2 to understand what the story of Wreck-It Ralph 2 is.
Yeah, so the story is they go into the internet this time. That sounds like an awful idea for a Disney movie.
Yeah, I was like, oh, oof. That's, it has emoji movie vibes, but, you know, I trust Disney. And Walt Disney Animation Studios with it a lot more than I trust, you know, Sony Pictures and TJ Miller. I still don't actually know what the plot of this movie is.
And I think that's good. I mean, they're just going to the internet. And I guess one qualm I have about it is this going to teach kids that the internet is a good place? Because it's not. It's not. And I think everyone knows it except kids. It's like a thing that you figure out when you're like 18. You're like, oh, you know what? Actually, this is a bad place. Like,
I'm waiting for the Wreck-It Ralph unfriended dark web crossover.
To show the true evils. I'm waiting for the eighth grade crossover.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, which, and we never addressed, but we're addressing now that we were not with you last week because we recorded an episode. We had it all ready for you. We had a guest. It was going to be great.
It was going to be great.
Content,
that was a really good episode.
Hot content for all you little people, all of our little viewing anglers. But then I gave my file over to Rob, as we do every week, and then Rob just destroyed it.
I just destroyed it
in front of my
out
face.
Out of sheer anger.
It took me minutes to export that. Minutes.
I screen shared to Dan and I showed him me putting it in the recycling bin.
Among other things, he forgot to turn off the camera. Our relationship is not the same, but here we go.
Dude, this is dark web.
This is the dark web. This is the broadcasting live from the intellectual dark web.
But yes, I lost the files of the previous episode. I also lost like 1 terabyte of unrelated files because my external hard drive that I store all my stuff on just up and broke that week. So major bummer.
How did it break, Robert?
I don't know. Just my computers wouldn't recognize it. I tried plugging it into all my different PCs and nothing would recognize it. So. Hmm.
Did you try a different USB cable?
I did.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I guess we're
You think you're going to save the episode now, live on air?
Wouldn't that be great if we're able to save it?
Disney movie.
Yeah, well, it's really just your part of the podcast that is not there.
Yeah, I mean, I could upload it with just, you know, your half.
This is just going to be known as the lost episode. Like, we're gonna keep going on. Like, the numbers are going to keep going, but... we're just going to always refer to the lost episode as whatever episode that was.
In 20 years, I'll do my best to recover it. And in 20 years, you know, when we're selling our podcast on vinyl, it's going to be the exclusive lost episode you can only get with the collector's edition.
The bootleg. Really, only 3 people know about the lost episode and what was discussed.
Yeah. Think about that.
I don't know if I said anything too crazy. I feel like we kept it pretty mild.
Yeah, we kept it pretty tame.
Yeah.
Man, though. I think I will just upload your half, but I'm going to use text-to-speech for my half.
Oh, yeah, because you're just going to get it off your script?
Yeah.
And just
remember,
time
these are all scripted.
Right, these are all scripted. Down to the last pause.
You know what? I'm just going to go on, like, I'm going to go on Fiverr. I'm going to be like, hey, I need a voice actor to read my script for this episode, and this is going to be someone completely different in the last episode.
How much does a voice actor cost for...
$5.
$5 for an hour?
Well, if you go on Fiverr.
And you can make money doing this?
Yeah.
By just reading stuff into a microphone?
Yeah.
What is Fiverr?
Fiverr is a website where you can offer any service for $5. So if it's like graphic design, like I'll design you a logo. Yeah.
That is the stupidest idea for anything ever. That is...
We should test it out. Let's test it out in one episode.
Like, see, like, we should pay someone $5 to be on the podcast and talk about
their
favorite.
Yeah, let's just get a rando to come on the podcast.
Somehow I feel like that ends with both of us in cardboard boxes underground. You know what I mean?
Gee, I mean, fuck. If we get them off the dark web, maybe.
Yeah. Isn't Fiverr... So Fiverr is not on the dark web?
Fiverr's not on the dark web. This is
sorry,
a legitimate
I guess I just
website.
Assumed. Let's get back to these trailers. Let's go to we've already said Wreck-It Ralph 2. I'm going to see it. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm going to see it. I'm excited for it. I will say that the female character they introduced in this trailer looks pretty generic, and I'm just waiting
Gal Gadot
for what,
one.
The Gal Gadot character, yeah. I'm just waiting for what her like semi-tragic backstory is going to end up being.
I bet her dog died or something like that. All right. If Beale Street could talk... The new movie written and directed by Barry Jenkins of Moonlight fame.
Well, it was written by James Baldwin.
Right. But I'm talking about he was the writer and director of Moonlight.
Oh, yeah.
And then this novel was written by James Baldwin. But Barry Jenkins also screen wrote. That's why it said screenwriter in the trailer.
Yeah.
It said director and screenwriter. I'm like, yeah, of course he's a screenwriter. Like, what other? It's because he wrote the screenplay. I don't know anything about this movie.
Neither do I. And the trailer told me nothing. But man, am I intrigued.
Yeah, it seemed very much based upon the cinematography to have it look a certain way. And I don't know what way that is. I haven't seen Moonlight. We're just going to play the I haven't seen it game today.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Moonlight. I know it's on Amazon Prime Video. I know that it makes me a homophobe and a racist for not having seen it.
Yeah,
I'm working on it, everybody.
Fix both of those easily just by watching Moonlight.
But
if you don't cry, though, then you're still a racist and a homophobe.
Okay. Well, does it matter which part I cry at?
No, you just have to cry.
Okay.
Mm.
I'll just eat something really spicy. Does that count?
Yeah. I mean, do what you got to do. Sniff an onion.
Do what you gotta do. All right. I don't really have anything to say about this. I don't know any of the people who are... Wait, Regina King is in it.
Yes. She's the amazing. Only face I recognized, yeah.
She is... I would actually just see a movie just because she's in it, because she's so good. I don't know anybody else in the movie. It looks cool. Barry Jenkins. Actually, the guy who plays Al in Atlanta.
Oh, I did see him in the trailer. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in it. Other than that, did not recognize anybody.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean they're not famous.
They're just in works that we are not familiar with.
Yeah. So my curiosity is piqued, but it will be, I'm going to wait for the reviews on this one.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll probably see it regardless of the reviews. I think Barry Jenkins is, you know, if it's even close to the quality of Moonlight, I think it'll be worth the ticket alone.
Yeah, maybe that's what I need to just see Moonlight, and that might inform, that might give it more context.
You should see Moonlight.
Yeah, I will. Someday. Soon.
All right.
I'll watch it this week. You know, you're not the boss of me.
I'm going to hold you to that promise, though. You put it, it's recorded.
All right, I'm going to watch it at work. I'll have Moonlight playing on one of my screens, and then I'll be doing work on the other one.
I'm sure your boss would understand.
Yeah, as long as there's nothing provocative happening in the movie, I should be fine, right?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Nothing provocative ever happens in that movie.
Speaking of provocative things happening in movies, the Happy Time Murders. That was a pretty good transition, you know?
That was really good.
Yeah, this is the Muppet, the GTA Muppet movie starring Melissa McCarthy, and Joel McHale is in it. It's just like a bunch of comedy like bit actors.
Yeah. Maya Rudolph.
Yeah. It's just the raunchy Muppets. That's what I'm getting from this. And it doesn't look very funny to me.
No, it doesn't. I think the first trailer was better than this, and the first trailer wasn't good.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, it's raunchy. It looks like it should be something similar to Team America World Police, but this is not giving me any vibe that someone had anything more than idea of what if the Muppets but raunchy.
Yeah, it's not satire. The comedy is really just coming from like, oh, what if like Muppets gave handjobs to each other?
Right, which we can all imagine.
Yeah, there's art on it, or art of that premise on the internet already. Like, we don't need a movie about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what's crazy, though? Is this movie's being directed by Jim Henson's son.
Really?
Yeah.
Adopted son?
No.
Regular full-blooded son?
Regular full-blooded son, Brian Henson.
That's a lot for me to process.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do with that information.
Makes me uncomfortable. I feel kind of bad for Jim Henson. Like, I mean, hey, maybe this movie is actually
Jim
funny.
I'm going to just throw something out there. I bet Jim Henson's son has had some kind of sexual experience involving Muppets.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Growing up in that lifestyle, it was inevitable.
It was Muppets all the time, man.
Let's continue to psychosexually analyze the sons of famous puppeteers.
I'm just saying that this movie didn't mean anything to me until I learned that, and now I gotta watch it just as like a study in the psychology of this kid.
Yeah.
Because this is like him, this is like young, throwing Freud's theories back in his face. This is like a break in the national conversation about puppets.
Was there a national conversation about puppets to
not
begin with?
Not until right now.
You heard it here first, folks.
Puppets are not inherently clean. And trying to make them seem like they've only ever been kids' things is revisionist history. And I will not be silenced. They had like dirty marionettes and stuff like that. That, you know, that stuff has got to be like from the medieval times.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think it's the fact that these are like Henson Company puppets. Like, they're clearly designed to look like Sesame Street and Muppet type.
Yeah,
puppets. You know, they're not going for that Team America marionette style.
Right. It'll probably be as good as Sausage Party, in which. I mean,
I
not
like Sausage
good at all.
Party.
Sausage Party is an awful movie, and you're stupid for thinking that, Robert.
Oh, my God. Watch you come out like in the Happy Time Murders and hating Sausage Party.
No. Sausage Party was, I was so upset. There's one funny scene in it, and it was all in the trailers.
I don't think they put that in the trailers.
Are you talking about the huge orgy scene at the end?
Yes. Because
that is stupid. They have a stupid conversation about Israel and Palestine being told from the perspective of a bagel and a falafel. And it's like, it's racist in like weird ways. Like, you're like, oh, look, all the Indian food is Indian. Like, it's every food is a caricature of that.
The movie was written by Seth Rogen. He has a uniquely Jewish perspective.
Yeah, not on like racist Indian stereotypes, though.
You mean you're upset that the Indian stereotype was played by Bill Hader?
Yeah. Wait, what?
You didn't know that?
You know what? Let's move on. I don't even want to talk about this anymore. This is stupid. This is stupid. So stupid. All right.
Speaking of stupid, give me the box office numbers.
Yeah. All right. Box office. We'll. So in third place, we got Christopher Robin coming to $13 million. That's nothing. I
For a second,
on
I
it.
Thought you just said Chris Rock came in third place at the box office. I was like,
Chris Rock did very well
just
for himself.
Him as a person, yeah.
Yeah. Mission Impossible 6 came in at $19 million. This is like its third weekend, right? That's pretty good for third weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Right around $20 million. And then The Meg with the big upset, $45 million, which is hilarious.
What a fucking joke.
Hey, I mean,
did you see it?
No, did you?
No, I did not see it. I have no plans on seeing that.
Yeah, now that like MoviePass only supports like two movies, and they're both The Meg.
Meg and Slender Man.
Yeah, really. Oh, so it was the same for you too this weekend. Yeah, because I tried to do Black Klansman.
Same. But no, it's like man. You either seeing The Meg or you seeing Slender Man.
Yeah, and it's like, all right, I guess this is worth it, technically. I don't know. I hope it changes.
I think it will.
Yeah, so that's weird. It's funny that people would choose to see that movie.
I think it has $15 a month to see The Meg as many times as you want.
Jason Statham, Ruby Rose, other people, a giant shark. I think people are interested in sharks. I think people will go to see shark movies. That's gotta be it.
I think people just like monster movies in general. Like, you know, there's a reason Fallen Kingdom did so well.
Yeah, I think this is just, hey, it's a big like, you know how Jaws was scary? Like, I bet this is like Jaws.
Yeah, but
it was probably more like Chinese. Deep Blue Sea.
So much more Chinese.
So much better.
I've never seen Deep Blue Sea.
It's not good, and that's all there is to say about it, really.
Is that the one where Sam Jackson gets eaten by a shark in the end?
Yes.
Okay.
And so Thomas Jane is in it.
Oh, yeah, the Punisher's in it.
Yeah, and LL Cool J, I believe, is in it as well.
Oh, back when LL Cool J was in movies.
Yeah. What an interesting time.
Yeah.
All right.
So is The Meg supposed to be, like, a comedy?
No, I think it's supposed to be not like super. It's supposed to take itself like reasonably serious.
That's not what the trailer was putting off.
Yeah, I think it's like I read the headline of a review saying it was like unpretentious and it wasn't like Sharknado, like winking at the camera, like that kind of stuff.
You don't need to be like Sharknado levels of parody to be like a comedy, I feel like, though.
Right. I mean, I'm sure they highlighted like the funny parts.
Yeah.
But I bet because is it an R-rated movie? No, it can't be.
I think I was reading somewhere that it was originally going to be, but then they cut it all out. One, because, you know, bigger box office numbers, and two, they wanted to release it in China, and you can't have that shit in China.
Yeah, that violent stuff.
Yeah.
Mm. China.
No violence, no gays.
Whoa, yeah. Imagine putting those two things in the same category. Wow, yeah. China, you're really out there, aren't you?
Yeah, and if you're wondering, that's also why Disney is never going to create a gay main character, because they want that Chinese money.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't even believe in a one China policy, I'll say it.
Yeah.
moving on to something completely different and less politically charged.
Hot takes.
Yeah,
hot takes. That's what you come here for.
Yeah. If you believe in a one China policy, you're a fascist. Oscar changes. Wow, they're putting a popular film category in the Oscars. Rob, what do you think about that? Give me a thought.
Wow, I think they're putting it in there just because they didn't want to give the best picture to Black Panther.
Yeah. That is a way hotter take than I was expecting.
It's actually not my hot take. I just think it's funny that anybody actually thinks that.
That would be, yeah, just to think that Black Panther was anywhere like...
Close to getting a Best Picture nomination.
Yeah, it's even like compared to like The Dark Knight. No Marvel, no MCU movie should get nominated.
No. Ugh.
Even though Black Panther is one of the better ones out of the MCU, not even the best MCU movie deserves to get nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
The best MCU movie is just like barely scraping the Spike TV movie awards. Like
the Teen Choice Awards.
Right, exactly. That is specifically where those belong. So are there going to be whole new like nominations for popular, like best, and are they just going to go by box office, or are people going to vote?
Yeah, like, what the, are they going to go by like Twitter trending hashtag, like whatever movie has the most hashtag tweets? Like,
are we going to vote online as it happens?
Yeah. Oh God. This is going to be a fucking clusterfuck. I can't wait for next year's Oscars. I'm very excited to see how this goes down.
This is so stupid. Like, the fact that they would even think that anybody who watches the Oscars would be dumb enough to think that this is not anything besides a cash grab is insulting, I think.
Yeah.
The popular film category. We already know which are the best popular films. They have this thing called money. It lets you track how many people have seen a movie before.
God,
are they going to not award the best popular film to the one that made the most money? What other criteria would there be? Are we just going to have like Hollywood elites tell us which popular movie was actually the best?
Yeah, I mean, that's stupid. Exactly what's going to happen.
That doesn't make any sense.
I bet it's going to be some threshold where it's like the movie has to have made over like $100 million at the box office, and then if it passes that criteria, then they're going to be like, okay, which of these movies is the best but not good enough to be considered best picture?
Right. So in this scenario, like movies like Titanic would be best popular movie, but could they also win best picture?
Right.
Can
I mean,
you be
like
nominated for
any,
both
any James Cameron movie or like any war movie, I feel like, for that matter?
Yeah, I mean, just because a movie is popular doesn't mean... I'm sure this has happened before. I can't think of it super recently, but we're one of the most the movie that won Best Picture made a lot of money.
I mean, Titanic, I think did Titanic win Best Picture? I don't remember if it was nominated or if it won.
Yeah, no, it won. 1999. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Titanic for sure. I know Avatar was nominated.
Right.
Mad Max Fury Road. That was nominated for Best Picture.
That was nominated, but has anything won where it's been... Return of the King.
Probably. Oh yeah, for sure. That was huge.
Huge. Yeah.
That's yeah. Those, so those I don't, are the I don't big know how the fuck this is gonna go down. Like,
it doesn't seem to be a good idea, and I think it's hilarious that somebody thought it was.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people who were tuning out of the Oscars were like, if only they had movies that I've seen. Like, if you're watching the Oscars, you're interested in movie, like in a specific type of movie.
Yeah.
You're interested to see the awards. You're interested to see the pageantry of it. You're interested in movies. It's not like, I mean, I think they must be them trying to, no regular old moviegoer who doesn't care about prestige movies, who's just going to see the blockbuster, is going to tune into the Oscars. They're going to turn it off in a second. The Oscars is so boring for people who don't care about movies.
Yeah.
It'd be like watching the ESPYs if you didn't even know what sports were.
Oh, is that what the ESPYs are?
Yeah, they're sports. They're like the ESPN Sports Awards. Yeah. Am I crazy?
No, I don't know what the ESPYs are. So, like, what fucking awards do they give out there? Like, best throw?
Yeah, no, like player of the year and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is not like...
I thought the leagues had their own awards for that, though.
Yeah, they give... I think they just give out several just different awards.
Oh, okay. Best basket, best goal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So they've got like best female athlete, best male athlete, best breakthrough athlete, best championship performance, best coach / manager. Yeah. See, and that's not even like half.
Man. Yeah. I know. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Well, see, this is a perfect metaphor then.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the other ones are that there's going to be a 3-hour broadcast and that not all of the awards will be televised, which, sure, I don't really care.
Yeah.
To pretend that I know that I really give, you know, that I care about the end of or who wins best sound design. I don't really care.
Yeah.
I'm sure they got it right. Yeah. Because the sound guys vote for it. Who am I? You think I know more than they do? I definitely don't.
Yeah. Well, do the sound guys vote for it, or is it just like the members of the Academy again, like any other award?
Right. Well, no, because everybody gets the vote on only specific things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I think everybody votes on all like the acting ones, but I believe directors vote on like best director. The sound people vote for the best sound. The cinematographers vote for the cinematography. Like, I believe it's siphoned off that way.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that. I thought everybody in the Academy just had like their entire ballot that they filled out before they turned it in.
Yeah. I mean, they have, you know, everyone can vote for best documentary, best the broader ones.
Yeah.
People can vote, but, you know, best screenplay, best adapted screenplay. It's not just screenwriters, but like the technical ones, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'm sure that they got the right one. That's all I was saying. Yeah, so that's it. I think it's stupid. I'm excited to see how it goes down, though.
Yeah,
I'm very excited.
They haven't announced who's hosting next year's, right?
Yeah, I think they just announced it's gonna be James Franco.
My dream has come true.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be James Franco and
Seth Rogen. Perfect.
That wouldn't be the worst. That would be better than. Who put James Franco and Anne Hathaway? Yeah, what kind of, you know, two charming people?
Yeah, like, two white people, that'll work.
That's exactly what they said. It's like, yeah. Let's put James Franco and Anne Hathaway up there. Like, why? Like, two white people, I bet they'll love that. I'm like, yeah, sure, who's going to argue with that?
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's a true, whenever people say racism doesn't exist in the film industry, look at that. Those two people only got those jobs because they are white.
Man, I want Dave Chappelle to host the Oscars.
Oh, I would love that. That would be amazing.
God.
Yeah, that would probably be better
Chris
than
Rock. Oh no, did he host the Oscars or the Golden Globes? I don't remember.
He hosted the Oscars.
Oh, get him back. I like Chris Rock.
Yeah, I like Chris Rock. He was good. Louie up. Bring Louie up.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus.
First stand-up appearance in like 2 years. Going to be at the 2020 Oscars.
By Harvey Weinstein. Jesus Christ.
That would be intense. Honestly, I like Ricky Gervais the best. He, out of all the hosts, he's the best one.
Host. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they should only have him because it's like, I love he just comes out. He's like, all right, come on. Nobody actually likes you. Like, nobody cares about you. You're all like, you know, self-conceited, arrogant, narcissist.
I want the hosts to write their own material this time, too. Like, when Jimmy Kimmel hosted last year, like, some of the jokes they were making him do, I was like, there's no way he had any input on those. Those are fucking terrible.
I bet his writing staff, like, does him, though, you know?
Yeah.
I bet you're in charge of hiring most of the writers.
Maybe. I don't know if that's an Academy decision or if a host decision, but yeah. I'm not that involved with the Oscars, surprisingly. I know.
I am awaiting my call to the Academy, and until then, I will keep mailing dead rats to the Academy headquarters.
Dead rats to the
under
cast
the name
of Suicide
Brian
Squad.
Williams.
They should get Jared Leto to host the next Oscars.
That would be weird.
In
that
character.
That would be a truly
in
strange
character
night.
As the Joker.
In character as every role he's ever done. That's what I want.
No,
ending with Requiem for a Dream.
Good God.
It ends with him getting his arm cut off. At the elbow, it's fine. At the elbow, it's fine. All right, final news of business. Mulan. The first image from the live-action adaptation of the Disney classic, Mulan. Mm-hmm. It's a lady and she's dressed in red, and she's got a sword, and she's looking determinedly at the camera. I have never seen Mulan. I don't remember anything about it other than there's a dragon.
Mulan?
I probably have.
Have you seen any movies?
I have seen three movies, and they are as follows.
And all
Pain
three of them are
Gain,
Die Hard.
Starring The Rock and Mark Wahlberg. Modern Time starring Charlie Chaplin. And Fast and Furious 6.
The most middling one out of them all.
You're telling me. Yeah, So those are the movies. I'm sure I've seen Mulan, but I saw it once. Like, these kids who are just watching Disney, my parents didn't buy us Disney movies. We didn't have, you know what Disney, what movie I remember watching a lot? Shrek. That's what kind of family we were. We were a Shrek family.
Mean, hey,
they were preparing me for the future.
We're a Shrek family. This is a Shrek household.
You eat your Shrek branded Oreo cereal that turns the milk green.
God.
And you like it.
That was an actual thing, wasn't it?
It was definitely, and I don't remember if it was if it was the Oreo cereal.
Yeah, eat that swamp juice, baby.
Swamp sauce.
Stupid
Shrek Robert.
You
and your
ocean
sauce.
Earth juice.
Put it, brand it. All right. You talk about Mulan. You know. That means a lot to you, doesn't it?
I watched Mulan at least once a year. When I was growing up, I grew up in a Mulan household, as they say.
Go figure. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that, I mean, a racist joke?
No, I'm saying you were raised by Asians. I was raised by Shrek. I was raised by ogres.
All white people are Shrek and all Asians are Mulan. That's the point of this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. The battle lines are drawn. Please send all your complaints to Alex Jones at Infowars.com.
Fuck. Not on Facebook or YouTube anymore, though.
Thank God, yeah.
You know what we do have in common, though? Both of these movies starred Eddie Murphy.
That is true, as something anthropomorphic.
Yeah. But man, I love Mulan. I don't know how I feel about this yet. I heard that it's not the live-action remake's not a musical, so I've already lost some interest.
Unless
this is like a gritty actual war story, and like they get Gore Verbinski to come in and direct the live-action Mulan, I don't care too much about it. And like this, I feel like they just released this photo to prove that they cast an Asian woman as Mulan instead of Scarlett Johansson.
Which I hear they were in final talks to do so.
Yeah, they definitely wanted like white people in this movie.
Well, that's like, you remember, because they're doing the live action Aladdin, they're basically doing live action. Remember all those old movies you watched? They're doing live action versions of all of them.
Oh, yeah. But the Aladdin movie is being directed by Guy Ritchie, which I am very intrigued by.
Right. And apparently they were having a hard time like finding their Aladdin, because they did like a star search, they went out to these like countries like in, you know, Northern Africa and like the Middle East, and they looked for so long. And it was always disconcerting to hear. It's like, hey, how's it going? Like, bad. Like, it's not going well. And like, but apparently they finally found their cast. And so I'm interested to see, honestly, like, I don't look at any Disney animated movie and think, wow, you need like a live action adaptation. Because a lot of times they're just they're like kiddie versions of real stories. Like The Hunchback of Notre Dame, a very dark, very tragic story that's made into a musical that ends well for the Hunchback of Notre Dame, who famously dies in that movie, in that story.
Same with the Little Mermaid.
Yeah, I don't even know that, but I'm going to go ahead and say yeah.
Most Disney movies, like any Disney adapted fairy tale, you can assume that in the actual fairy tale or the actual story, the main character dies in the end.
Yeah, because they're like fairy tales, and I feel like old fairy tales were a lot more like Grimm's fairy tales.
Yeah, because
they're
meant to teach kids like, hey, don't do this thing or you will die, like this main character did.
Right, the ultimate consequence, you will die.
Yeah, but this movie, like, I don't know. I feel like, again, a lot of the magic from those that, like, Disney Golden Age, too, just comes from the fact that they were animated and they look so good. And apparently this live-action Mulan isn't even going to have Mushu in it. What's the point? Why are they even doing this? Like, yeah, I'm all
Mushu's
for
the
more
dragon.
Represent... Yeah, Mushu's the dragon. Mushu is cool. Eddie Murphy.
nice.
And I'm all for, like, more, you know, Asian actor and actress representation in American cinema. And I'm sure this movie's going to make a ton of money because it's Disney and it's Mulan, so it's a recognizable name. Uh-huh. But I just feel like there's no way it's going to improve on the original story. And, like, I'm just... 2019, when this movie comes out, I'm just going to watch the animated Mulan again because it's amazing.
Yeah. Did you see Crazy Rich Asians this weekend?
I don't think it's out yet. I think it's out next weekend.
Okay, yeah, because I was going to see that, and then I didn't.
Yeah.
And I thought...
That is the movie we should see next weekend for the next episode.
Yeah, sure, I believe that.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be at the end. So speaking of reviews, let's just go right into what we saw this weekend, which was the new Spike Lee joint, Black Klansman, starring John David Washington, among others, and Adam Driver. It's the real-life story of Ron Stallworth, the first black police officer in Colorado Springs, famously in Colorado, and who posed as a white man and became involved with the KKK, having to send a white police officer in his stead when they went to go on the meetings. So they had Ron Stallworth, black cop, talking on the phone, and they had this other guy pretending to be Ron Stallworth going to the KKK meetings and pretending to be a racist.
Man. And it was fucking great.
Was that
great.
Pretty good?
Yeah.
That was what?
It was fucking great.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I liked it a lot. A few thoughts immediately. The film starts kind of slow, I think.
Yeah.
But almost like deliberate. And then it really ratchets up the stakes when you get into the real... You get like slight bumps of racism, but it really kicks off when they start infiltrating the Klan. The first really good scene is when he goes undercover to the black speaker who's speaking for the black college union.
Yeah.
And he's having a very intense speech. And Spike Lee has this stylistic thing. I don't know. You might agree or disagree with me. But where he will kind of break the fourth wall of filmmaking, of kind of saying, like, I'm no longer telling a story right now. I'm showing you something. Like, I'm holding something up to you so that can see what I'm talking about. And I'm using these characters to deliver a message. That happens, I count, three times if you don't count the very end.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that happens about three times in the movie. And it is, I think, it's super interesting stylistic choice. And I think it's mostly effective. But you could also make the argument that he's just foregoing subtlety entirely.
Yes.
But for me, I'm fine with it. I think it comes down to personal preference.
Right. I think he's foregoing subtlety so aggressively, or not aggressively, deliberately.
Yeah.
That he's saying, but he's still shooting it like a movie. He doesn't have to shoot these things in a very interesting way.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He's staging the theater of it, the acting, to show us something. It's a theatrical performance, but just not, you know, it's accomplishing two different things, delivering us a story and giving us the experience of the characters while also kind of like getting at it's more evocative, I feel like, than actually, you know, showing what happens. It's making you feel a certain way. It's like Lynchian in that way, almost, of here's some images, now you reckon with it, but just much more like linear than a Lynch surrealist moment.
Yeah. I think that where that's the difference between, like, you know, breaking the fourth wall and having it just be straight documentary.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. This movie does that. I think, man, the first one was a bit obvious. And I think it so that's another problem I had with this movie is the pacing and the editing felt a bit jarring throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of been the consistent problem that Spike Lee's had in all of his films. But it doesn't detract from the film enough to make me, you know, dislike or even really want to spend that much time critiquing it. But that
scene, the pacing is a little bit off. I agree with you.
Yeah. But so the pacing for me when it comes to films like this and films based on real life stories is always a bit, I don't know how to feel about it, because the pacing is supposed to be based off of the real life events. Mm-hmm. And, you know, life doesn't necessarily have perfect pacing all the time.
Right. But think of a movie like Goodfellas, where that's also based off real life, but it is paced in, you know, impeccably, and it's edited so tightly.
Yeah.
You know, obviously that's the gold, literally the gold standard for biopics.
Yeah.
And with one of the, you know, the best directors and some of the best actors, like, all around, I think. And it's also trying to kind of convey something with the editing. But this movie, yeah, I get the same thing for some things, even like a movie like The Aviator. You know, I'm just like, ah, OK, this is, these are a sequence of events, not necessarily like a normal plot, you know, like a Joseph Campbell, like, hero story plot. Yeah.
You know, actually, I get that too, because I actually just started thinking of Dunkirk, I think, is a film with fantastic pacing that is also based on actual events. And I guess it all comes down to how you choose to warp and manipulate time as a filmmaker. So I guess, I can't really cut Spike Lee that much slack when it comes to that, when people have shown that you can do it in a much more cohesive and flowing way.
Definitely, but I think this is kind of like a huge heavyweight boxer. It might not be move the smoothest, but when it hits you, it really knocks you on your ass. Oh, you know, it is some of the most intense moments I can remember in film of Adam Driver, who plays a Jewish police officer, is going undercover with the KKK, who, if you're not familiar with the KKK and their relationship with the Jews, it's not a good one. They don't like Jews. They don't like black people. They don't like hardly anybody besides white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. And they're very even – they don't even say clearly what, you know, Protestant counts as Protestant, you know?
Yeah.
Like, are Calvinists in there? Do they count?
It's a self – it's self-defined, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Do you think most of them are Presbyterian? Like, what do you think – or Baptist?
I would say probably Baptist or Catholic being the majority population of the KKK.
No, because they burn. They don't like Catholics either. They my grandpa. This is actually a weird story that I just know. The KKK burned a cross on my grandpa's lawn when he was a kid because he was Catholic.
Is it not because he was Irish?
Well, you know.
Dude, I don't.
It's probably one of those two.
I really don't know that much about the KKK and who they decided to target, other than not white people.
Right, exactly. But my point is, you have this guy going undercover, and they're like, you know, and it gets a little fishy. It creates that, like, tension of being forced to just say, like, awful, awful, heinous things. And you can tell that it's kind of like Adam Driver is, you know, once again, the highlight of a movie where he's not the main character.
Yeah.
Like, he does it so well of just this, you can tell, very complicated guy. And he plays it very straight, very unmoved, very impassioned. But then you can tell later in the movie, he kind of, like, a few times unravels a little bit and starts talking about how he's feeling. Yeah. You know, like, this is actually, you know, affecting, because it's affecting us every time. You know, it's the KKK. It's the big racists. So anytime they're talking shop, they're really going for it. And it's very difficult to hear.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, how I think that there are definitely those scenes where the dialogue is meant to elicit horror.
Yes.
Hopefully from any reasonable person.
Right.
But I think there are also scenes, and I'm assuming it's why they got Topher Grace to play David Duke. But there are scenes where, like, there, it seems like Spike Lee is trying to draw legitimate comedy from some of the dialogue being spoken by the KKK members. And I think that the movie, to me, like, 80% of this movie is also just, I'm trying to phrase this properly because I don't want to come off as an asshole, but
too late, Robert, they already know.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. It feels like 80% of this movie is just like a drawn out joke of dramatic irony, with, like, any scene where they're talking to Stallworth on the phone, I think is kind of almost inherently funny just because of the irony of them, you know, talking to a black man with the language that they're using.
Yeah, and I think that's how well John David Washington plays it.
Yeah.
Is that he kind of has this, like, oh, I'm getting one over on this guy.
Yeah.
And that's, it almost lightens the mood. Because if we're not for that levity, and the media, the press around this movie has tried to frame it as a comedy.
Yeah.
But it is not a comedy.
Yeah.
It only has that conceit of it's the dramatic irony of a black man impersonating a racist white man. That is that crux of like comedy is what keeps the movie from being extraordinarily depressing.
Yeah, because it was a depressing time, and a lot of the events that happen in this movie are extremely depressing. And I guess it really depends on how much humor you actually find in the irony of life. I think is really going to determine how much you find this movie comical.
Yeah, and even that, I would consider myself someone who can find a lot of irony in life, and it kind of feels like Spike Lee builds in you to feel a certain way and kind of have this like, oh, goody goody, haha, that's kind of fun, glad that whole thing, and then he's like, nah man, this is real, like at the very end, kind of like grabbing you by the face and saying like, look in my eyes and you will see the future.
Yeah,
and you're like, I don't want to do it.
I can see forever.
I think
that there are definitely parts of it that were intentionally comedic, because I think comedy is a great way to get people to lower their guards and confront the truth more readily.
Definitely.
And I think that this entire movie, like, you know, again, leading up to that final end montage kind of feels like that to me, where you were having like this movie, it wasn't 12 Years a Slave, and like there were comedic beats throughout the movie. So then when the end, like, I'm not saying there were dramatic beats too that were absolutely horrifying.
Right.
But at the end of the movie, like right after you kind of have your narrative wrap up, you know, everybody gets their due, and then the montage happens and you're just like, oh shit, so this is the message that is really trying to be gotten across. And you kind of got hints of it like maybe halfway through the movie when he was talking to his superior officer, and he was talking about
the KKK's political goals,
and how he was saying, like, you know, the American people would never elect president like David Duke, and just like, holy shit.
Yeah, and at the time you're kind of like, ah, that's funny or whatever, like it's kind of like, ah, I see what you're doing there.
Yeah.
But then it's kind of like,
then it sets in like what the actual implications of what is happening are,
right? And that is what is almost a disturb. This is a movie of its time, I believe, where a lot of times I think we, and I say we as, you know, the royal we, as, you know, a pretty, you know, moderate Democrat leaning guy, that in this time when people kind of try and draw these weird or these similarities that seem over the line, or they seem to be exaggerating, and then you can actually say like, no, like, look at this. This is actually like awful. This is actually beyond normal, like, joke, like, conventions. That to me is what this movie does, is kind of say like, no, you think this is like that we're kidding, this is like all a fun thing, but this has real implications that have, you know, blood on their hands today.
Yeah.
And for him to kind of like, for him to do that so brazenly and so like, you know, taking everyone and, you know, shaking them and be like, no, you got to wake up and you got to like pay attention, because this stuff is real and it's here. That point had not been so like made real to me in a movie I can't remember in a long time.
Yeah.
How it just like connected, like, I get it. Yeah, I get it. Like, I'm listening.
Yeah. Like, oh, I feel like that's why this movie is one of the best movies Spike Lee's done in the past, like, decade, if not more.
Definitely, yeah.
And I feel like you could easily argue that this might be his best film to date.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would. I think it's my favorite. I haven't seen all of Spike Lee's filmography, but of what I've seen, this is by far my favorite.
Yeah, this is very, very good. I think my final thought is, see it. this is good as a film. This is good as a flick. It's entertaining. You know, I think most people would be able to enjoy it. It is intense. If you're going in expecting a lighthearted comedy, like, ha ha, this will definitely push you into bits of uncomfortable, but it is worth it. I think you'll definitely have to see it by the end of the year if you care about the best movies made this year.
Yeah. I would agree. I think this is a must-see of 2018. It works both as a film and as a flick. It's entertaining, but it also has an extremely pointed message that's told very coherently and very pointedly. But I also think that, I mean, this movie, again, the story is fascinating regardless of what time frame and what the social context of a movie like this coming out is. But the fact that it is coming out in this social context and coming out now, I think makes it all the more important and all the more powerful.
Agreed. All right. Well, speaking of movies that are political in nature or have messages, our feature today is Robert and I are going to share some of our favorite movies that are, or we're each going to share a movie that we feel like makes a really powerful political message, or our favorite movie that makes a political message.
Yeah.
Rob, I want you to go.
We can do more if we have extras.
How many do you have?
I have one main one, but if we want to do a bonus feature, I'll throw out another.
Oh, yeah. Okay, maybe. all right. I'm going to go first. And this is one of my, I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, but one of my favorite movies of all time is Traffic.
Mm.
And it's Steven Soderbergh at his peak. Benicio del Toro, Michael Douglas, Topher Grace. Yeah. Mm. We're just talking about him. It's great.
It's all connected.
Cast. Yeah. And even what Dennis Quaid is in it. Catherine Zeta Jones is in it. It's great. Great cast. It's a movie about the drug trade and drug policy in America and in Mexico. And it follows all of these lines, these, you know, every aspect of the drug. You have someone who's in the policy, someone who's on the U.S. side trying to catch people, cops on the Mexican side trying to stop the cartels and the drugs, and you have someone who's using drugs, and you have someone who is involved in the financial aspect of the drugs.
Yeah.
And it's the way that it all works well together. It's still like, you know, you can watch this movie today and say, yeah, no, our drug policy is still messed up.
It's still
for
fucked.
And it's a movie that kind of, it has its moments of these characters are talking like, oh, directly like, oh, what, you think you cops like are even like doing anything like catching me, you know, like talking to the audience about that. But it's done so well that you don't even notice. And it's such a, like, nothing has changed really since that the movies happened. We've had like some legalization of marijuana, but not a whole lot of other
level.
No changes at a federal level. We've had an opioid epidemic in the time that this movie has come out. So I think it's
2001, right?
Yeah. It's it came out like 17 years ago. Like this is almost a 20-year-old movie. It's crazy.
Yeah. I wonder, was that pre or post 9/11?
I think it was post 9/11.
Okay.
I'm reasonably sure it's post 9/11.
Mm.
But I could be wrong.
Yeah, man. That movie's like the Cloud Atlas of drugs.
Yeah. It actually came out in 2000, so it's pre 9/11.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I wonder what that would be like if it were made, if Steven Soderbergh just remade it, or if he made a sequel.
And I bet he would like remake it. Like he would just remake one of his own movies.
It, yeah. I wonder if he would recast everybody.
I bet he would. I bet he
would. Just cast Benicio del Toro to play every character.
Right, yeah. This is going to be a weird movie. But yeah, so I think that movie, it holds up today. I would recommend it. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. It's very enjoyable. And Soderbergh is on top of his game. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think the message is really important. That's something that it seems crazy to me how illogical, like drug policy, you know, like immigration and like taxes, that's hard to solve. That's something that you could literally fix the U.S. drug policy in like a week. The laws are, the president has so much power to just change it. Just be like, oh yeah, no, this is not like, yeah, we're gonna say that we're not gonna say that marijuana is as bad as heroin. Like now,
yeah,
like, that he could just say,
like,
that.
Just deschedule it. That's all you need to do, and imagine how much would change.
Yeah, and it's like the way it's so contrary, like counterfactual. Like if so, a Schedule One drug is something that has no medicinal value or whatever. Yeah. Only use alcohol. Throw that on. Like what?
Yeah.
Like the
what?
It's so obvious. Tobacco. Like it's so obviously a like flawed that anybody could look at it and be like, no, that's like wrong. Like no, yeah. A basic thing about it.
Yeah.
So.
It's because there's no marijuana, or there's no powerful marijuana lobby in America.
Right, when there's powerful alcohol and tobacco and
yeah.
Firearms and just need a really good crystal meth lobby. That's what we need.
I think it's called Big Pharma.
Oh, right, yeah, amphetamines, you know.
Got them.
Yeah, they found a way.
God.
That's all I really had to say on my, what's yours?
That's a good choice, though.
Yeah.
Mine, speaking of tobacco lobbyists, is actually thank you for smoking.
Oh, yeah. What's your real one, Rob?
My real one? You want the real one? Actually, I was actually debating between thank you for smoking and Gone Girl because I wanted to talk about how they both tackle themes of media manipulation and spin really effectively. But my real one is Man of Steel. Man of Steel is my favorite political movie of all time.
And what's so political about it that you love, Rob?
Man of Steel is... I'm very happy you're actually making me talk
Say
about
it.
This. Man of Steel is a beautiful. It's a beautiful reframing of a classic American character to hold a mirror up to the current state of government affairs in modern day America.
In what way?
So I think Man of Steel wouldn't. I mean, a lot of people would argue that Man of Steel doesn't work to begin with. But
I would argue that
the way I view it, the way I interpret it, Man of Steel wouldn't work the way Zack Snyder wanted it to work without Superman already being the all-American icon he already is. Like without the Christopher Reeves Superman, you wouldn't be able to do this version of Man of Steel. And everybody's biggest complaint with Man of Steel is that it tries to graft this like darkness and this grittiness to a character that historically has not been dark and gritty. Historically, Superman has been the ideal person, the ideal man. But Man of Steel, I think, does some pretty bold things by morally obfuscating what is the ideal. And I think that a lot of that has to do with how the government, like, you know, there's the whole thing about Clark Kent or Papa Kent saying, hey, don't come out. Because if you come out, people are going to be scared of you. And I think, you know, that's like a metaphor in itself. Very X-Men-y, very Bronson-ish.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
I think that I agree with you to an extent. I think that the vision that you're arguing for is more radical than what Zack Snyder put out. Because when you have like an all-American like alien, like an illegal alien...
Yeah.
Crashing down in Kansas with superpowers and like is supposed to, I think more could have been done with that. And I don't think
terms of immigration policy. Yeah. But I think that it's less about that specific issue and more about it's more about like the American dream as an ideal and how it doesn't exist. It's impossible for the American dream of the 1950s and the 60s and 70s of the Richard Donner Superman to exist in today's modern world.
Okay, so you're saying that both Superman, it's that Zack Snyder's vision for Superman is the same thing. Like this guy ends up as Christopher Reeve if this is in the 50s, but since it's now, this is what he ends up being.
Yeah.
Okay. I completely disagree with the intent of the director. I think you're giving him a lot of credit, but I like this interpretation of the movie a lot more than just what we got.
I don't know. I think that there, if you watch Man of Steel again, I think that you'll realize Zack Snyder has a bit more vision than people want to give him credit for.
I think people have given him a lot of credit over the
years. I don't think people give him any credit. People fucking hate Zack Snyder.
They hate him because he takes really great properties and makes okay things with them.
I think they're better than okay. I think Dawn of the Dead is fantastic.
Okay.
I think Watchmen is great.
Watchmen is okay. It's pretty good. It's got some...
I mean, and you already know, me, everybody that knows me knows that I'm a defender of Batman versus Superman.
Me too, yeah, we're both on the same page on that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
One of these days, we should have another, like, deep dive into the philosophy of Batman versus Superman, because I would love to have that conversation.
Yeah, no, we will do an episode specifically about Batman versus Superman.
All right.
And it's happening right now.
Yeah.
Whoa!
Keep listening.
No, it's not.
Subscribe to our Patreon to hear that episode.
Yeah, $10. And I will, if we get up to $20 a month on Patreon, Rob and I will do a 20-part series on Batman vs. Superman.
Scene by scene.
20-hour-long episode. You see? Yeah, starting from the beginning.
Yeah, if we get up to $50 a month on Patreon, we will just read the entire script of Batman vs. Superman live on the air.
We'll pay people on Fiverr to do it.
Yeah.
You stupid moron. So you want to talk about Thank You for Smoking and Gone Girl? Are you satiated?
I mean, yeah, I'll talk about Thank You for Smoking. I just think that it's a really clever movie that's a little underrated when it comes to movies about... the media and political spin, and I think it's kind of funny because it kind of indicts the whole, like, I feel like I'm gonna piss people off when I say this, but you know how, like, when you meet a libertarian and they are always the type of person
and their
that
knuckles
is, like,
are on the ground. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you for being more offensive to those people than I'm about to be, but they're the people that are always like, debate me. Fucking debate me on this. Debate me.
Debate me. I don't believe in anything.
Like that's
why we hate you.
That's the main character of Thank You for Smoking. Because, and like, he's always talking to his son about, like, oh, the art of debate. You can make anybody believe anything and, like, get any legislation passed as long as you're good at debate. Like, clearly, the evidence shows that tobacco causes lung cancer and a variety of other health defects. But if you have a good orator and you can sway public opinion in your favor, none of that matters.
Oh, yeah. No, good things don't happen just like because they're good.
Yeah. Like, legislation doesn't come out of a moral obligation.
Right. Yeah. It's really bad at doing that, actually.
Yeah.
You look at, like, most governments ever, and usually at some time they're like, what if we did something bad? And everyone's like, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Let's try it. Like,
Yeah, but what if we did the good thing? Shut up. This is the 1500s.
Yeah. But yeah. And I think Gone Girl has very similar themes, just on a less legislative basis, but more about that movie's more about the court of public opinion.
Yeah, that movie couldn't come out today, I think.
Yeah.
That would be a...
That is actually interesting. It fascinates me that a movie like Thank You for Smoking wouldn't be able to come out in an age with social media. Or, like, if it did, it would have to be drastically changed, I feel like.
Yeah. Oh, I was talking about Gone Girl.
Gone Girl came out in, like, two years ago.
It came out, like, 5 years ago. It came out, like, 6 years ago.
No. Gone Girl came out in 2014 or 2015.
It came out my freshman year of college.
No,
it didn't. That was 2012, yeah.
I don't believe
search
you.
Your feelings.
It's 2014.
You know it to be 2014?
Yeah.
When did I start college?
You don't even remember your college career correctly. I think it came out the year you graduated. You graduated in 2014?
What am I thinking of that? Who did I swear to...
I think we saw Gone Girl together.
No, we did. Wait, did we? I swore I saw this with a girlfriend that I thought I had broken up with in 2014. Sure, I guess. Yeah, maybe we... Maybe? What? I felt so... I remember seeing that movie, huh?
I mean, I'm all sure right. you...
Well,
I
came
think
out
you
4 years
saw
ago.
That movie.
Yeah, 4 years ago. Things have changed in the last 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
Rob, a lot of things.
Excuse me.
I can think of two specific ones.
Yeah.
So, that'd be... Yeah, a movie where the central premise is... A woman lying about years of abuse and then commits murders.
That book still sells like hotcakes, so.
Yeah. I mean, it's good that, like, Sharp Objects was the perfect, like, Gillian Flynn
I still haven't seen Sharp Objects.
Yeah, you should watch it. It's good. It's pretty good. It's got the girl from It in it.
Oh, it's got the girl from It. It's got the girl from Man of Steel in it.
yeah, exactly. Among other people. Amy Adams in Man of Steel, she is not a... Like, she's a great actress, and the part of Lois Lane is...
She has no agency in that movie. And, like, anything that they try to give her agency with just falls flat on its face.
Yeah. It's it could be better.
Yeah. I'm not saying these movies can't be better. I'm just saying I just think that there is value in them that people are overlooking. And that's my only point.
That's, like, the theme of the podcast, I think.
Yes.
There's value here that people are overlooking.
Yeah, unless that movie is Jurassic World. You got to look at it from a different angle, a different viewing angle.
You got to view it. You all didn't see, but Rob really cheesed to the camera right now. It's a viewing angle. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's how we have to end every review, every hot take. They're not hot takes; they're viewing angles.
Stop.
Trademark.
Can we just change our name, the entire property name, to Hot Takes, and then we review the movies by eating steadily spicier wings?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. Well, I've got nothing left. You want to let's sign this off? You got to get to watching Warcraft for the fifth time.
Watching Warcraft for the fifth time? I did that like 2 years ago.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, this has been Hot Takes. This has been Viewing Angles. If you want to follow us on Twitter, follow us at Viewing Angles. Follow us on Facebook. You can find us just by searching our fucking name in that search bar. That's what it's there for. Follow us on the internet at
did you just read something off the internet? Did you just read your lines of like, oh wait, yeah,
I'm sorry, I forgot my script. We didn't have as much time to rehearse the script today. I apologize.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you want to follow me personally, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd at Robert Jr. JR.
And now for a slightly more complicated sign off, I'm Dan Leo. You can follow me on Twitter at The Dan Leo Show, and follow me on it. No, don't follow me on Instagram. I don't want you. Don't look me up on any other social media platforms, or I will block you immediately.
That's for patrons only.
That's for patrons. Yeah, exactly. If you donate $10 to the Patreon, I'll let you follow me on social media, and I'll DM you a controversial opinion every time you sign on. Yeah, and what else? Letterboxd, D Leo, that's the username. Check it out. This has been a great episode of Viewing Angles, right after the lost episode. I'm so glad you could all stick around. Like, subscribe, all of the above. Please send everything.
Send Carolina Reapers to Brian Williams. Take care of NBC.
MSNBC now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Save Brian Williams. All right. Well, until next week when we will see Crazy Rich Asians, right?
Crazy Rich Asians, yeah.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, coming at you next week. But for now.
Bye.